Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Lou. Thank you, Rabbi Gorstein. Okay, thank you all for coming. Rabbi Lou told me that this shiur is going to be about Chuches Akum. And just get a little introduction and feel free. We're going to try to be interactive as much as we can. So please feel free to participate whenever you'd like to. Okay, so on page 2 is the Rambam, and I understand this year is part of your Rambam study. So it says, Ein holchim b'chukos ha'ovdei kachavim. We can't go in the statutes of the Gentiles, v'lo medamin lahon, and we don't compare ourselves to them, lo b'malbush, not in dress, v'lo b'seyer, and the hairstyle, k'yotzi b'em shalem, or lo selchu b'chukas ha'goyim. For omer b'chukosem lo selechu. So this is the prohibition of going in the ways of the non-Jew. So the question is, where do you draw the line? I mean, non-Jewish people wear the same type of clothing that we wear. I mean, the industry is not just the Jewish industry. We wear a tie, a shirt, you know, the same type of things that we might wear. So when is it considered a violation of this prohibition, and when not? Does anyone want to, in other words, can't wear the clothing of, right? Lo be malbush, right? So how do we apply that? Lo be malbush. I mean, in other words, you'd have to have only something that Jewish people wear? I mean, where do you draw the line? Where do you differentiate? When is it considered a violation, and when not? Does anyone want to suggest anything? What's your name?
Simona. Maybe when someone can mistake you for a non-Jew,
like a yarmulke, meaning if you wouldn't wear a yarmulke, then you could be mistaken for a non-Jew. So therefore, wearing the yarmulke would be a obligation, so that you shouldn't think that you're non-Jewish. That's very good. Who said that besides you? So, let's see if I put it in the packet here. I didn't realize you were gonna have this great idea. But the Taz is one of the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch. Let's see if I got to that here in the packet. If not, you could. Right, but the Taz is not in this. One second. Let me see if it was put here. Okay, but even if it wasn't, it's in this sefer. My baruch is a sefer I wrote on Minhagim, and. And there is an opinion of the Taz. I don't know if it's. I put it in this packet, but okay. You'll have one of your teachers show it to you, where it says that the obligation to wear a yarmulke might be a Torah obligation, because if not, it might be a violation of b'chukosei lo selechu. So that's good for the men. What about the women? Yeah, what's your name? Right. Oh, so that's you saying very well. You say wear, in other words, if you're wearing something that's not sanua, so in addition to the fact that it might be a violation of the laws of tznius, maybe it's also included in b'chukoseim lo seilechu. What's your name? You mean, right, the person gets married, covers the hair, maybe that would be another, so maybe that would also be included. Very good. Very good. Okay, so let's look in the Shulchan Aruch on the first page here. This Shulchan Aruch is from Yoredeya. The Shulchan Aruch is divided into how many sections is the Shulchan Aruch? What's your name? Four sections. So which is this section? The first section is called what? Arachayim. That's like laws, everyday laws, like davening and Shabbos and things like that. And then Yoredeya has kashrus and things like that. And then Evan Ezra is like marriage laws, and Choshen Mishpat is monetary laws. So it's for four parts. So the Shulchan Aruch, the first part of the Shulchan Aruch is the Mechaber and then the small prints of the Ramah. Right, so let's look at the Haggah. Haggah, that's the Ramah, that's usually the source of Ashkenazic practice, is in the Ramah. So he says, Eli moved on mehem b'malmusha v'shar masav. V'chol zeh eina osur ela b'dove shenagu bo ha'ovdei kachavim l'shem pritzus. He says that, and that's exactly who said that? The non, the tzniyas thing? What's your name again?
Sarah.
Right, excellent. So you see, you're in here. You made it. And she made it too, but just, we don't have that page. You also made it. So he says, "Chol zeh inos al bedovish shenogu bo ha'ovdei kachavim l'shem pritzus." So what examples does he give? So he says, "Kegon shenogu lulbosh malbushim adumim." Because if you wear certain red garments, because red, like, is very, you know, it gets you to look at it. You know, so it might be not something that's the most sanua dressed, wearing red. Who malbush sorim chadome lezeb mi malbushay pritzus. O bedavar shenagu leminhag ulechok. Vein tam bedavar. So now he says another idea, and that is if non-Jews do something that we don't have a distinct reason for what they're doing. They don't have a distinct reason for what they're doing. They just do something, and we don't know, and it's not known exactly what they do, but it's like a thing, like a shtick, a thing. So if you're going to do that, so then what are we assuming? That you're just doing it because you want to be like the fad of the non-Jewish world. So that's what he says. So that's what the Ramah says here. So if you wear something that's not sanua, or you do something that the goyim do without any specific reason, because, in other words, sometimes they just do something, just that was their way of doing it, just you know, their cultural way of doing it, and you're doing that, and there's no reason for you to do that. why are you wearing this type of style just to be like them? And therefore that would be a violation. This is all from the Marik. If you look at the last three lines of the Ramah, the small print, Marik is of Yosef Kolon, one of the Rishonim, and the Ramah is quoting this opinion. Now, he asks another question. What if Dover Shanogu Latoelis, Kigon Shadakam Shakol Misha, who rofe mumche, Yeshlo Malbush Miyuchad, Shaniker Bo Shahu rofe Uman? What does that mean? How do you explain that? What's your name? Ilana?
Ilana.
Okay. Right, in other words, so the doctors would wear a certain uniform. Even like doctors today, or people, sometimes you see people in the street, they, you know, that they're medical professionals because they're working, you know, in a hospital, and they were wearing a certain type of outfit. So is that considered b'chukosem lo seilechu or not? So what is he saying? Yes or no? Is it a problem or not a problem? Yeah, in other words, there's a reason for it. There is a reason for it. They're not just doing it as a fad. There's a reason to distinguish that this is the garb of the doctor. So then, mutar lelofsho. Then the Rama says that it's permissible to wear such a garment. So the bottom line is that the Rama quotes from the Marik, one of the Rishonim, Rav Yosef Kolon, that says that the violation of Chuseim is from the perspective of dress, is if you wear something that is not sanua. So therefore, that's considered a non-Jewish thing, because the Jews would dress differently, so that would be a violation. And if you wear something that they wear as a fad without any reason, there's no real reason, that this is the, you know, just people like to, this is our style, this is our thing. And there's no necessary logic behind it. Then the Rama says, those are a violation of the chukos seyem lo seylechu. But if there's a reason why, in other words, it's not just a fad, they want to distinguish what the doctors look like or something like that, so it'll be readily understood that this is a doctor, so then that would be permissible to do. And that's the Ramah citation of the Marik. Now, the Vilna Gaon, that's this big thing, Bir HaGra here. And we're not going to read the whole thing. But I'll pick out like one line for you to focus on. Because the Vilna Gaon, you know, it's long, and we could take the whole day just to read through this whole the whole piece. So let's look on the left column of the Bir HaGra on the bottom. The first word on the line is 5 lines from the bottom on the left side, Kavan. That line that says starts with the word Kavan. You see that? Got it? Kavan? Kavan Dixiv, yes. So in the middle of that line, it says Ella. Ella, kol davar shahinu osim zulasam mutar. V'chein b'malbushim, aval kol shalofshim malbush hamiyuchad lahem osar. In other words, any time that we would wear something that non-Jews wear, and it's known to be a non-Jewish style, and so that, and even though maybe there's a reason for it, but if we're also doing it, in other words, it's not that it's not tzanuah, right? Not like, well, it could be tzanuah. And it's not that there's no reason for it. There could be a reason for it. Like for example, the case of the doctors, apparently in the culture then, in the non-Jewish world, the doctors would wear a certain outfit. So the question is, could a Jew also wear that? And there was a reason. They distinguished themselves that was the way. So it's not that it's not tzanuah, and it's not that it's there's no reason for it. But this is a non-Jewish practice or a non-Jewish style. And it was made originally in their world. So if we would go ahead and do so, that would be what? A violation of B'chukoseyem lo seilechu. So then, according to the Vilna Gaon, to wear that type of outfit that the doctors were wearing then in the old days would be what? Would be a violation? Would be a violation. In other words, the Vilna Gaon disagrees with the Marik, and the Marik says that if there ain't tam b'dover, so then we don't know. Maybe it's some superstition. Aval the Marik says al dover shenogu. I'm reading the Ramah shenogu l'toelis. There's a reason. Kigosh adarkum shal kol misha hu rofe mumche yesh lo malbush miyuchad sheniker bo shu rofe muter l'lovsho. But the Vilna Gaon says no. Even if there's a reason, if the bottom line is this is a non-Jewish, this started in the non-Jewish world, and we're going to do what they do, even though they have a good svara, it's a good idea to have this type of. There's nothing inherent that it's not tzanuah. So the Vilna Gaon is much more machmir than what, than the. The Marik. So let's just go through some examples that might be relevant to understand this better. This Sefer Imrei Baruch is a sefer that I wrote on Minhagim, one of the Sfarim on Minhagim. So take a look on page 7 and tell me what you think. On page 7. Inyan levishas begadim shaloshim b'shas tekes siyum halimudim. Someone want to translate that for me? Sarah? What is this? Just tell me, what does this mean? What is it? What is it referring to?
You wear clothes.
For what? For what? One word. Graduation. What's your name?
Aviva.
Graduation, exactly. The cap and gown. The cap and gown for graduation. So, in general, in this, I guess, the schools you're in, I'm sure in elementary school you probably had a graduation, and you had the... Right, so that's a discussion. Is that considered part of B'chuk Hoseim, because it's something that's emanated probably in the old universities of... didn't start in the yeshivas in Volozhin, you understand? It was in the old academies and things like that. So for Jews to have this dress, would that be a violation of what? V'chosem lo talechu. So Nu, what's the answer? What do you think? Someone else who didn't speak yet? What's your name?
Nava.
Nava?
I think no, because all the Jews supposed to do it. So
it must
be allowed.
Okay, that's a good way of... But that's a little bit circular. I want to know if... are they allowed to do it? You're Melamed Zchus. You're saying the Jews, you know, them. You know, it's like the question they ask. How do you know that Yaakov Avinu wore a yarmulke? So what's the joke? Because it says, "Vayetze Yaakov." Yaakov go out without a yarmulke. So you know, so right, but how do we know that? Okay.
I'm guessing that it's not because there's a reason for it.
So therefore what?
Therefore it's allowed.
But say more. Allowed according to who? You say you know it. You know it. You help her out. You know it. You know it. We quoted two opinions, right? We quoted the opinion of the Mari quoted in the Ramah that says what? Anything that's not sanua, or if it's done, there's no reason for it, that we're just doing it to be like them. So that would be a problem. And the Vilna Gaon says no. If it's something that emanated in the non-Jewish world, then... we can't follow it, even if there's a reason for it. According to Marika, it would be allowed, and according to the Vilna Gaon, maybe not. So that's what we said over here. Hine, look on page 7. The Bati Sefer Shonim Osim Tekes have a ceremony of Gemar Halimudim. Elushim Misaimim Halimudim, those that are graduating, Lovshim Begodim Miyuchodim. Is that considered chukas ha'akum? But muskel rishon, the first wins, yesh litlo sheilazu beplukta shel marik v'agra. That maybe this question is based on this machlokas between the marik and the gra. Lefi ha'marik yesh tam lemalbush ha'miyuchat shelahem kamo ha'kapa. That was the thing that the doctors wore. Then it would be permissible. And Shamati Midid Ravagon Yeshua Hoffman, now he's passed away, Mishem Ravagon Ravaran Salvechik, who was the Rav Salvechik's brother, said, Rav Hoffman said in his name, Shekem Yesh Kam Tan Ladover. In other words, what's the reason? Lahoros Latzibor, so everyone should see at the crowd, who are the graduates? Mihem Simon, Surely Yehudim Lulbosh Malbushim Elu. So according to that, there's a reason, so then Jews would be allowed to wear. But according to the Vilna Gaon, Shafilu Dovah Sheyesh Bo Tam, even something that has a reason, but if we learned it from the non-Jews, Anu Lameidim Mayagoyim, Yesh Bezeh Mishum Iser Chukas Ha'akum. Ilu Lo Hayu Chashim, unless it was something so obvious that we would have done it even without them. But in other words, but something, a specific type, like the cap, is a certain type of cap. We wouldn't necessarily, in other words, if you wanted to, if I go around the room and say, what should graduates wear? And I get 40 opinions. You wouldn't necessarily come up with what we do today, with a certain type of cap. It's a flat cap with a tassel and a, right? Well, but it's a specific thing that they did and we're following along. We you could have had 100 different types of outfits to wear to distinguish, right? But we're doing that specific type. So that's where Rav Aaron Salvechik thought that maybe it's based that according to the Marik, the Ramah, it would be permissible, and according to the Vilna Gaon, it would not be. Oh, let's take another example. And I'm sure there are many many examples. So there is a thing that in some communities this is like a big deal, and some communities never heard of this thing. But that is, Bez Hashem, you should all get married in the right time to the right person. So there's going to be a question of where to have your wedding. And usually you're probably not going to have any say in that thing. But and what was the question? The big question was, and this question was a big thing in Europe and Hungary. In America, not so much, but some people who have the tradition from those communities in Europe and in Hungary have very strong feelings about this matter. And that is whether it's proper to get married in a shul. And when I say a shul, I don't mean that there's a social hall in the shul. I mean in the sanctuary where you daven. Now, I don't know how many weddings each of you have attended in your lifetime. Some I'm sure did, some maybe more, some maybe less, depending upon some of you have older siblings that could be already married yet, some not, some yes. But let's think about that. Getting married in a shul. What would you say to that? What would you say? Is that b'chukoseim? Is that something to do with what we discussed? Yeah. What's your name? Yeah. Well, what's your name first? Rivka. Okay. Right. So that's the first thing, the starting point. The starting point is, do we say that in the non-Jewish world, the weddings take place in the church? So for us to have a wedding taking place in our shuls, maybe that should be a problem. Parenthetically, before we do this, so I shouldn't forget. We're going to get back to this in a second. One question is, what about just the regular shirt, like a button-down shirt today? Why is that not prohibited according to the Vilna Gaon? Because we said, right, the non-Jews wear this type of shirt also, right? So the Rav Moshe Feinstein on page 6 here just writes that, because when they made these shirts, it wasn't something that was... See, Ayin in the third line, the Igros Moshe, Shemalbushim Shalovshim Mabdina Zu, Shari the Israel Lovshim, Ki Mekar Shinasu Tsuras Habgodim Lonasu Bimucha Lonochim, Elonochim Israelim, Mela Shar Lovshim, Afil Shita Sagro. In other words, when they made these shirts, it was for everybody, Jews, non Jews, it wasn't something specifically in the non Jewish world. So therefore, even the Vilna Gaon would say that this would be permissible, because so that's the one point that I just left out. Okay, so let's get back now to the shuls. So Rivka suggested that the starting point of this conversation should be the question of non-Jews getting married, and that's part of the religion, right? That they get the ceremony, a religious non-Jewish Christian ceremony is going to take place in the church, and therefore maybe for us to therefore have it in a shul would be a violation of that, right? That's the first thing. So and if you say like that, it might be prohibited according to both opinions, because we're doing it if we're, you know, because it looks like we're doing what they're doing. And again, it also, as if you read in previous from in the Sefer that I have here from the Maram Shik, that it could be that intent might have a play role, but maybe not. Maybe if it just looks like we're doing what the non-Jews are doing, Maram Shik says that could be a problem. So that's your starting point. So let's go further from that. Does anyone want to add? So Rivka started us off. She started us off, explained to us what's the starting point. The starting point might be that's a problem. And maybe the problem is both according to the Ma'arik and the Vilna Gaon, because we're doing something that non-Jews do, and therefore maybe that would be a problem for, according to every opinion. Anyone else who didn't speak up yet who wants to say something? Yeah, your name again? Shira. So you're saying, basically, what you're saying is something that Rav Moshe Feinstein said. That's pretty good. And what he said was that no, we're not getting, if we would get married in a church, then that would be a problem. But we're not getting married. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was obviously one of the big gedolim in America. And basically, he was a trailblazer. Because he permitted certain things, and because of his stature, they were accepted in many communities, not every community, but in many communities. And even though, you know, in Hungary and in places in Europe, the Rabbanim signed a kol kore, a doctrine, that it's forbidden for anyone to get married in the church. And Rav Moshe said, he thinks that we could be lenient on this. And that became the minhag in a lot of communities, to get married in shuls. Because basically what you said, what Shira said. Because we're not getting married in their, in front of their God, so to speak. And there, if we would get married, he thinks the violation would only be if we get married in a church. Now, getting married in a church would be a problem, because it's probably prohibited even to walk into the church. So that would be a little complicated to get married in the church. But he said that would be the problem. But to get married in a shul, why not? That was his opinion. And that's exactly what you said. Okay, well, let's hear what other people want to say. Your name again? Yeah, you. Gabrielle?
Yeah, I think it would be a lot, because for weddings, also have different ways that the ceremony.
Yeah, we do definitely do different things than what they do. Whatever they do, we don't. It's a different type of ceremony, but it's still our marriage ceremony, their marriage ceremony. So the question, right? So that's a question. Is that enough? The fact that it's a different type of ceremony, but it's both a marriage ceremony, and maybe it still should be a problem. That why are we doing it, dafka in the shul? Yeah, let's see more. What's your name? Shira. That's an excellent question. So Shira says, let's forget the B'chuk Hoseim Lo Salechu. Shira says very well. Isn't there a problem of eating and drinking in a shul? You're right. And you should invite me back to give you a whole shir on that topic. In fact, there happened to be a tremendous tshuva that Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote. Who's from, anyone here from Elizabeth, New Jersey? No. So the Rav in Elizabeth, New Jersey, was the late Rabbi Teitz Zatzal. So there was a big shaila that came up that's still relevant, and it came up, and this question was even brought to in front of the courts. You know what the question was? I'll tell you what the question was. The question was, could a blind person with a seeing eye dog walk into shul with his dog? And this was like a big issue. A big issue. And because maybe it's not proper for the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses to have such a situation. But it will take me too long to explain all the details, but you hit it on the head that what you said is definitely, it warrants a whole shiur, not just a comment, you know, but simply, you know, obviously when we talk about getting married in the shul, we're not going to have the eating or drinking in the shul, we're just going to do the ceremony in the shul, and then they're going to go downstairs to the social hall or something like that and have the, you know, and have the meal or some other location, etc. But still, the ceremony itself might be a problem from the perspective of the Kedusha of the shul. And that's an excellent point. And again, if you come again and you invite me again, I'll give you a shiur on that as well. But it's worth it. What you said is excellent. But let's go back to the Chukoseim. Rivka? Okay. In other words, it's something we could have thought up as ourselves.
Yeah, like,
because, meaning?
Yeah,
because in other words, it's just it's a spacious room. It's a spacious room. So if it's a spacious room, so then you don't have to be a rocket scientist to say, oh, it's a spacious room. You know, why not? Right? So that's what Rivka is saying. That we maybe even the Vilna Gaon would say it's mutter. Right? First you start off saying maybe it's asur according to everybody. But now he's saying the opposite, which is good. It's good to think it through. He's saying maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe even the Vilna Gaon would say, just like the Vilna Gaon said the shirts or something is okay because we would have thought of it ourselves. It's not like, you know. So that's another perspective. Wait, who? You didn't speak? Did you speak yet? Okay, you both speak. Okay.
Maybe it's not absurd because it's not arbitrary. I'm doing it for a reason. And it's not like
we're doing it for a reason, namely. We're not doing it because they're doing it. We're doing it because why? And what? Not because it's spacious, but because they wanted the shul because the shul is special. And, you know, there's even a big question about having funerals in shuls as well. That's also the opposite side, to bring the mason. And, you know, in this yeshiva, you know, over the years, there are different rabbanim who've been very connected to the yeshiva here. And you know, they had the levayas in the Beis Medrash, etc. Okay, yeah.
Also, a lot of times when people have weddings, the actual ceremony and the eating part isn't usually in the actual room where they
are. Right, that's true. I would suggest probably that in the non-Jewish ceremonies, they're not eating in that room either, right? They're probably going to eat someplace, you know, have the meal or whatever, however celebration that they... Yeah.
Maybe the closest thing we can get to Hashem would be closer if we were in a shul to Dom Hashem and have God in our wedding. But Tom just can bring their idols wherever
wherever they are.
In other words, non-Jews have physical idols, so they can...
If they want to get close to their gods, they can do it any way they want to. But for us, we happen to be...
So you're saying that maybe it's a preference. That's what you're saying, right?
Maybe not a preference, but I could see how...
You could see how, why Jews would want to do it more than...
Yeah.
Because the non-Jews can bring their physical idol wherever.
Yeah.
It's important. But, okay, that's very interesting. Okay, it's good that you're thinking. That's very good. Okay, let me show you an idea, then you'll tell me what you think of this idea. It's page 8 in the packet. It's from the last paragraph. So there was a sefer. It's not so common in the circles maybe that you're part of. It's a Hungarian Rav, was one of the biggest Hungarian Rabbanim in his time, Rabbi Yehuda Asad. And in Hungary sometimes they would spell Yehuda with an aleph at the end, but that's besides the point. And he has a discussion about getting married in shul. And the bottom, he quotes two lines of the Maril. Now the Maril is one of the big sources of what? Of Minhagi Ashkenaz. Of Germany and Minhagi Ashkenaz. And in fact, one of the biggest communities, maybe it's not in terms of the size today, is the Breuer's community here in Washington Heights that had, you know, was the real tradition from Germany of the Minhag Ashkenaz. And in the Breuer's community, not anymore. It's already, but it used to be that everyone, especially the Rav Breuer's family, would get married in the shul. Because that was the minhag that the Maril had. And that was, the Maril was the one who had all the Ashkenazic minhagim that's quoted. Maril is quoted like in many pages in Shulchan Aruch. The quote from the Maril is a separate sefer you can get, all the minhagim of the Maril. So the Maril was into getting married in shul, and that's what people used to do. Not necessarily today. It's because, you know, it was very good because, you know, if you ever see the community on Bennett Avenue, the shul is on one side, and right across the street, 90 Bennett, is the social hall. So it was great. You got married in the shul, and then you just went across the street to the social hall, and it was good, and probably wasn't so expensive. And if you wanted to have an upgrade wedding, you know what they did? They would have the meal in Mount Sinai, in the shul right there. That was considered like an upgraded wedding. Now people, but they were very makbid because they had the tradition of the Maril. And that was the German tradition, the Ashkenaz tradition. And maybe one of the svaras that you people suggested was maybe part of the Maril's idea. But comes the Maria Sad, who was from the Hungarian perspective, and he says, let's look at a Rashi and Chumash on page 9, second line in Shoftim. So let's see if anyone's familiar with this pasuk and the Rashi. Lo sakim lecha matseva asher sanei Hashem alokecha. Is anyone familiar with that? With that pasuk, what's a matseva? Well, a monument. And does anyone have a recollection of maybe what Rashi might say on that? The difference between a matseva and a mizbeach. And so, let me remind you. So there are two types of altars to bring a sacrifice. One is called a matseva, and one is called a mizbeach. Mizbeach had multiple stones, and the matseva had just one stone. And the Torah says, you can't use a matseva. Lo sakim l'cham. Hashem sanei Hashem elokecha. Hashem hates that. So why does he hate that? So Rashi explains, but who used the matseva? Who used the matzeva in Chumash? Yeah, so, right, yeah, the Avos, right. Right, the Avos use the matzeva. Right, you look in Brachos, they're all talking about Vayake matzeva, Yaakov, you know. So, how could we have to be frumer than Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? That we can't, but the Torah says, yeah, you can't do it. So what does Rashi explain? Rashi explains, here, if you look, okay, I'll tell you the other time. So Rashi explains that you're right. In the time of the Avos, it was acceptable. But then, I think, what's your name? Shir, yeah. But then you know what happened? Rashi says, then later in history, after the Avos, the non-Jews used it as part of their religion. To use a matzeva. Again, matzeva means one big stone to be put the animal on that one big stone, in contrast to a mizbeach, which was multiple stones. So mizbeach is what we do now, I mean, in time when there was a base of Mikdash or Mishkan. And a matzeva was in the time of the Avos, but now it wasn't accepted anymore. Why? Because the non-Jews started to do it. So your question is, but the non-Jews could usurp something from us? Say the non-Jews would start wearing tefillin or shaking lulav, we would have to stop? So he says no. So the idea is like this: if there's a mitzvah in the Torah, right, to put on tefillin, to eat matzah, to shake the lulav, and then the goyim decide, hey, we like that mitzvah, we want to incorporate that in our religion, would we stop doing it? Of course not, because our Torah can't change. So if the mitzvah is our mitzvah, but if it's not necessarily a mitzvah to do it this way, in other words, you didn't have to specifically do it with one stone as opposed to many stones, but this was the way that others did it. Not that there was a chiv to do it that way. And now, what's happening? They're going to, the goyim started, the trend became one part of their religion to do it that way. But it wasn't something that was a mitzvah to do it specifically with the one stone. So then we have to stop. That's what Rashi says. So that's why, Lo sakim lecha matzeva, asher sanei Hashem elokecha. Hashem doesn't like matzevas anymore. Even though it was accepted by the others, for us it's not. What's your name?
Aviva.
Aviva?
On Purim, we wear like costumes, but like,
right, so that's right. So that requires a whole discussion about what you're allowed to wear on Purim, right? But yeah, okay. But that's an interesting point as well. Well, so that's what the Mari Asad said. You see, in the time of the Mariel, that was an accepted thing. People, Mariel speaks about weddings, they were all in the shul. They were all in the shul. So what's the whole discussion? What was the whole discussion? So the Mari Asad says that because subsequently the goyim started to do that as their religion, to get married dafka in the church. So therefore, we have to give it up. If it would be a mitzvah dafka to get married in the shul, so then it's like wearing tefillin. We don't have to give up tefillin if they're going to give... we don't have to give up tzitzis, we don't have to give up lulav, we don't have to give up shofar if they start doing those things. Because that's a mitzvah. But if it's not a mitzvah, it was just a practice of how a custom, and wasn't specifically a mitzvah to do it that way, but if the goyim start doing it as their religion, then we have to give it up, and that's what matzeva is. And he says the same thing what Rashi says about the matzeva had to be given up to use it as mayah, because the guy started Hashem says, Lo sakim lecha matzeva, Asher sonei Hashem lokecha. So the same thing again, getting married in the shul. And that's a fascinating discussion here of this topic of about getting married in shuls, and there's a lot, and so there's, you know, much more to talk about. I'll end with one last thing. maybe I'm a little, you know, there's a discussion about decorating the shul on Shavuos, right? Putting up trees and greenery, page 13 here in the bottom. And if you look, if you're ever here in Washington Heights on Shavuos, you should go see the Broya Shul, because that's something they do, that they get, because again, Broyers are very into their minhagim. So so even though the Maria Sad said this whole thing, but they still, this is our old minhag of the Maril, and they're not giving it up. So I'll have to have another explanation of why. But the Vilna Gaon was the one that said that you're not allowed to put, because apparently in certain holidays, maybe Easter or whatever it was, things, you know, they do that as well. And that's a machlokas between the Vilna Gaon and others. And maybe the Vilna Gaon, as we point out here, is following his shita of his stringency of the Bechukosem Lo Selefu as well. Okay, so just to recap what we discussed today. We discussed the Torah says that there's a Isser Bechukosem Lo Selefu, and we said that not to do similar things to the non-Jewish world, and we said there's a machlokas between the Marik and the Vilna Gaon. The Marik is quoted in the Ramah. Marik says that to dress any in a way that's not sanua, or to do something that's a fad that has no reason, but if we're going to do it, it seems that we're just doing it to copy them, so we're not allowed to do it. And the Vilna Gaon says no, that even if there's a reason for it, but it was originally initiated in their world, we can't follow that as well. And then we discussed the question of the cap and the gown for graduation. Maybe that's dependent upon this machlokas. We discussed, somebody, one of you pointed out the Taz. We said, I told you to tell your Rebbe to show you the Taz inside, about maybe wearing a yarmulke might be included, that after wear, not, you know, that idea. And then we discussed the graduation outfit. Then we discussed getting married in shul, decorating the shul for Shavuos. These are, but you know, and all said and being, you know, after all said and done, you know, a very core value, and it's Pesach is coming up, and we know that one of the things that we Chazal tell us that the Jewish people were redeemed is lo shinu shmam malbusham, you know, that they, and we have to have a pride in who we are. And sometimes when we live in the non-Jewish world and the community, and once you're going to get older and you might have jobs in the, you know, overlapping in the non-Jewish world, we have to make sure to you know, to be respectful, but on the other hand, to have our distance in terms of what we're, because that's what Chazal say. Chazal permitted the wine of a non-Jew, because you know, we respect all human beings, but yet on the other hand, we can't intermarry, we can't, you know, so it has to be, you know, like sometimes we have, you know, to sit down and eat, you know, in certain situations with a non-Jew is not considered, might not be considered the most proper thing, and to bishlakum, even the food that they cook, you know, we're afraid that can create too much of a camaraderie. You know, I live in a building here in Washington Heights, so sometimes we have a birthday party for one of the kids, and we might be friendly with some of the non-Jewish neighbors, so we'll knock on the door and give them a you know, a piece of cake, but we won't necessarily invite them to come in and eat with us, etc. But we still want to maintain a respect, and you know, but there has to be always in life gedarim. That's the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, asu siag laTorah. That there has to be sometimes boundaries, and sometimes you need guidance to know what's considered, you know, going over the line and what's not, and that's the Torah has these halachas of Kosem Lo Seilechu and other halachas that, you know, give us our own guidelines of what where the line should be drawn, and then when we start the Yom Tov of Pesach, where the whole geula came, Shaloshinu Shemam Lashonu Malbusheim, something we should always keep in mind. So I'd like to thank you for coming, everyone, to be here. And okay, we should do it again one day. Okay, thank you all for coming. Right. In other words, you're going to, under the chuppah, you drink the wine. So that's the question of what exactly is prohibited in a shul in terms of eating and drinking. There is a concept that certain shuls were made on condition that we should be allowed to do certain things in the shul. But again, even that is a line where to draw. You know, so. So that was a discussion that maybe that would still be included in the condition when the shul was built, etc.
There's other shoes. People do like kiddush and avodah in the shul.
Right. Right. That's a very good point. We make shuls. There's an old minhag to make kiddush and shul Friday night, and avodah and shul. Right, so, but that's not necessarily having a whole festive meal and a whole festive thing. But right, the question is, in the old shuls, when they, you know, has strict kedushas based hakinesis, would they also make the kiddush and shul? Today, we assume that the shuls are made conditionally, you know, that certain things are permissible, but you can't like just have a carnival or something like that. Well, that was the question about the seeing eye dog. That is that considered, as we said, there's always a line, and the question is, where's the boundary? So maybe just having a little kiddush of that is not the same as having a whole kiddush where you're having food and removing all the chairs and having some. This could be different than just having a sip of wine under the chuppah.
Take one more.
Right, but we're saying that even if it came later, like the others came first, but yet once the Jews, the non-Jews started using the matzeva, then we have to give it up. But we don't have to give up our tefillin if they would start wearing tefillin. We don't have to give up the matzah. We don't have to give up anything. But there is a concept. It's not who came first. Because you see from the others came first. And yet Hashem says, I despise if you were going to use the matzeva today. Even though that was the old tradition. Why should we have to give it up? The answer is because it was never a mitzvah to actually do it. It was the way they did it. So now you have to change your way. Even though you came first. It's not right.
What about mitzvah with your abundance? Like, would we have to change it if the non-Jews started
doing it? No, right. In other words, if the non-Jews started lighting Hanukkah candles, we'll still light Hanukkah candles. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, sure.